Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Talk Radio. Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on the home of common sense. It is, of course, Talk Radio. The world is once more becoming more and more perplexing with each and every edict and regulation that seem to be being issued almost by the hour and then changed again. Today, we're expecting more announcements out of America from the office of the president. Yep, it could be that Joe Biden is going to set quarantines on all visitors as of next week. We're not sure if that's what he's going to do, but there's likely to be some kind of change if you are planning to go to the US of A or maybe people are coming from there to here. The Tories, meanwhile, are telling us not to kiss anyone under the mistletoe, as if that's still a thing. I mean, I don't think anybody's done that for quite a few years, except for, of course, at Tory party Christmas parties, like the ones that Boris has in Downing Street, where nobody else can have one. And, of course, Christmas parties are now being cancelled right, left and centre, even though they keep telling us we don't have to do that. It's a very mixed picture. Nobody seems to know what to do. Nobody knows what's going on. We're waiting for the next shoe to drop. And it could be good. It could be bad. It could be indifferent. We just don't know. And just for good measure, the French are revolting again. President Emmanuel Macron has called Boris Johnson un clown. Not quite in those words. I'm using sort of Frunglish there because a knucklehead, which is a particularly American phrase that I didn't know the French were particularly good at using. But anyway, it won't come as much of a surprise to Boris Johnson that Macron doesn't like him, I shouldn't think. And we'll test the frosty diplomatic waters this morning with John Rentoul, chief political commentator at The Independent. And we'll be checking out just how bad the power cuts are in the north of England and Scotland. There's more than 30,000 people, apparently, are still waiting to have their power restored after Storm Arwen at the weekend. Now, I know that these things can be difficult to do. I know that these things can be sometimes rather more complicated than they seem. However, 6 nights without power seems an awful lot. Some people were being told yesterday, well, we might be able to get you back into the grid by about Christmas, which is, I'm sorry, just not good enough. So we're going to try and find out what's going on, why it is quite as bad as it seems to be. Helen Dale's here as well with her take on the big stories of the week. Plus, what's going on in Europe, where Ursula von der Leyen is now going out to call for the possibility of compulsory vaccinations in the EU. She says 150 million people in the European Union are not vaccinated, and apparently that's a lot of people. Really? According to her. We've also got Angela Levin on standby because we're expecting a ruling on the case between Meghan Markle and Associated Newspapers at some point today. And because it's Thursday, it's time for Helena Nicklin and the Thursday Club. She's going to come in with some rather nice Bordeaux, apparently, today. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Well, it's not something I say very often, but a very warm welcome to John Rentoul. It's not that bit, but it's the next bit.
I do say a very warm welcome to John Rentoul,
and I do mean that. What I was about to say is I don't know where to begin, because there's an awful lot to be going after today, you know, with Macron's clown comment, with Boris Johnson's Christmas party, with Keir Starmer's performance yesterday, which was rather good, I thought, and also now this whole idea of the EU possibly bringing in more vaccinations and Christmas just being in limbo.
Well, let's start.
We don't
with,
know.
Let's start with Emmanuel Macron.
Let's do it.
I thought that was extraordinary that he used Frongle to criticise Boris Johnson, who had used Franglais on him.
But
Boris Johnson told him to prenez un grip.
That's right.
And then Emmanuel Macron called him un clown. and what was the other one? Knuckle.
A knucklehead, which is very much an American word. Because I only came across it when I lived in America. People used to call, you know, other people's kids your knucklehead. You know, it's not a particularly terrible insult, but it's kind of...
Well, it's not French.
It's certainly not French. And you know how they hate the Americans. I mean, they hate anything American.
Well, exactly. Perhaps I think it's particularly insulting to use Franglais to criticise the British. I don't know, but anyway, relations are shockingly poor, and that is extremely unhelpful and not in anybody's interest, and not in Boris Johnson's interest. I mean, you might think Boris Johnson could get a few plaudits from the knuckleheaded section of the electorate by going to go to war with France.
No,
but actually, the problem of the small boats crossing the Channel. Requires us to get on with France,
and the
small boats crossing the Channel is far more damaging to Boris Johnson
than it is to Macron.
And going to war with France might be temporarily popular, but it's not going to offset the unpopularity of failing to get a grip of immigration.
And you might say this, but you would be slightly off the mark if you were surprised at it. I mean, I think it's a bit old-fashioned, isn't it, to go to war with France? You know, to make out that everybody in Britain thinks France is horrible and we hate the French. That's why we hate the French. And, you know, let's rock out that Rowan Atkinson song and all. You know, we don't hate the French. Well, I don't hate the French anyway. And I don't know anybody else that really does.
No.
So to play to that kind of audience is mad, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, Boris Johnson should not have done the silly Franglais, and he should not, you know, you can sort of see him trying to be polite to the French, talking about our friends on the continent, but he can't resist the sort of cheap jar.
He can't. And I mean, he's like that guy that never knows when to say it.
Yeah,
and he kind of goes into the wrong room and says it, and everybody goes, "Oh, for God's sake, this was not the place to say it." But I mean, by the same token, Macron has behaved terribly badly.
Oh, yeah,
as well.
No, I'm not saying.
He's been moaning since the submarine deal disappeared. You know, faster than you could say, you know, nuclear.
Absolutely, no. But I'm just pointing out that it is very much in Boris Johnson's interest to absolutely humiliate himself at the feet of this ridiculous French president. In order to try and resolve the Channel crossing problem.
And there's still the fishing problem is still to be resolved, as is Northern Ireland.
Well, indeed, all of
that. I mean, I know all of that isn't necessarily just France, but, I mean, France is very much a part of it. Priti Patel, I'm told, is off to Italy today to see what she can get out of them, given that the French don't want to see her.
Talking to the Italians about stopping people getting into small boats on French beaches is not really going to help.
Well, I suppose that they have come through Italy at some point, very possibly. Some of them have even arrived on the shores of Italy before they've ended up in Calais.
Indeed.
So, I mean, I don't know whether they'll maybe tell her that they've done something good to stop them coming, but I don't think they have, because I think the problem for Italy is that the boats that arrive on their shores, like Sicily and that other island, Malpelusa or whatever it's called, I can never remember the name of, is the boats are actually bigger. There's like 200 people coming on each boat rather than sort of 20.
Absolutely. All the other countries in Europe have similar problems.
Mm.
And
I mean, it's true, it is a Europe-wide problem, but I heard another conversation earlier in the week where it was said that the G7 was thinking of getting together to discuss it, which would mean that they'd have to invite the Americans and the Japanese. To which you're going, well, sorry, I mean, what's it got to do with them?
Well, absolutely. I mean, actually, the Americans do have a similar problem, but it's completely unrelated.
Yeah, but they're not coming on boats, though.
Which is their border.
Their problem's actually worse.
Yeah.
Just before we go on, there's some breaking news. I said we were expecting a verdict. There is one. The publisher of the Mail on Sunday has lost a Court of Appeal challenge against a ruling in favour of the Duchess of Sussex over publication of a personal letter to her estranged father, Thomas Markle. Well, there was some thought that might be reversed, wasn't there?
Yes.
Given what had come out in the last sort of court exchange where Meghan Markle admitted that she'd forgotten that she'd instructed some people to write a book about all of this.
That was extraordinary.
So, I mean, obviously the judiciary is still very much in her thrall. Because they've decided that, as a point of law, it doesn't make any difference.
They may have decided this on the merits of the case. Who knows?
Well, they may have done. But, I mean, I've never quite gone along with that. Because, first of all, this is a judge who decided on the case before he heard any of the evidence and decided there wasn't any point in having a trial. Which is a very novel way of approaching the law, it seems to me.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not up with the ins and outs of this particular case. I work for the Independent, Mike. I mean, we don't.
You don't probably even have a lawyer.
We don't give we don't give undue prominence to stories about the
Well,
royal
you
family.
Say that, but I mean, the Guardian always does. Particularly, I mean, used to upset Piers Morgan no end because they'd spend ages and ages writing about how terrible it was that they were always going after the royals, and then they would repeat all of it in a huge spread at the weekend.
Well, that is all absolutely true. I mean, the Independent does cover royal stories. Yeah. But I personally don't take much interest in
it. No, that's fine. Absolutely fine. I will not ask you any more about it. Let's talk instead about Christmas, because it seems to me that people are very confused inside of Downing Street about Christmas. One, they think that it's all right for them to have a Christmas party last year when clearly they shouldn't have had one.
Well, that's a bit of a separate issue, isn't it?
But, well, it's all part of the Christmas roundup that I'm doing.
Go on, round up Christmas.
Then we've got Theresa Coffey saying, you know, don't kiss anyone under the mistletoe. I mean, how out of touch does she want to appear to be? I mean, I don't remember anyone kissing anyone under a mistletoe at any office party that I've been at for about the last 20 years. I mean, maybe the Independent things are different.
Well, I don't know. I don't think mistletoe has featured at an Independent Christmas party for some time. I think she was speaking metaphorically, should we say.
Well, we've also been told that we shouldn't be doing any unnecessary socialising, which presumably includes kissing under the mistletoe.
Well, that was the confusion yesterday. Yeah. Was it the day before? I'm losing track of time now.
I'm losing the will to live.
The Prime Minister had to sort of try and reverse his way out of that one. Because his message is very much we've taken some precautionary measures.
Yes,
we're waiting to see what happens, but in the meantime, carry on with all your arrangements.
But like everything else that doesn't go quite as he planned it to go.
Yeah.
That's not really happening, because I'm hearing every single day from people who are having Christmas parties cancelled.
Yeah, absolutely.
A guy that runs an events company the other day saying that everything that he has had booked in for the month has gone.
Really?
People are just not doing it anymore because they're not sure that they can do it.
Yeah.
They're not sure that they can get sort of, you know, safety precautions to such an extent that they can still have a party.
Well, it's also, I mean, the Times has cancelled its Christmas party, I read.
Is that right?
The Independent Christmas party, as far as I know, is still going,
yes,
going ahead.
Well, there might be some that are going ahead, but there's an awful lot that are being cancelled, is what I'm saying. And an awful lot of people,
absolutely.
And an awful lot of people who were going to travel for the Christmas period are not sure what to do. And I'm one of them. So that's the reason I'm quite interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I hate to be sympathetic to the Prime Minister, I mean, which will annoy some of your listeners, but I mean, I do think the government is in an impossible position, because we are dealing with uncertainty. We are dealing with a new variant, and we don't know how bad it is.
Yes, but if you didn't know how bad something was, why would you take the precautions that you take in case it's bad? Wouldn't you wait and see?
Well, no, because you want to, if it might. I mean, it's risk versus.
Yeah, but the point is,
they should be
getting better at this instead of worse, and it seems to me they've got worse at it.
I don't know that they're getting worse at it. I mean, they took limited precautions to try and slow down the spread by time. To let the scientists work out how bad this thing is.
For one thing, for me, the travel precautions they've taken are over and above ridiculous, right? Because they have affected the
they
cost.
They are inconsistent.
They have affected the cost for people to a hell of an extent. They've also changed the way that it all works, and they've made it impossible for people to come back from holiday. And particularly around Christmas and New Year, when nothing's going to be working.
Yeah.
Can you imagine trying to get a test done in 2 days? That's not going to work, is it?
But also, I suspect that it's all too late anyway. I mean, because
the variant
has already arrived.
Yeah, well, it arrived the day before when 600 people got off several planes from South Africa.
It was too late at the moment.
But I mean, if you look at the actual kind of state of things, up in Scotland, they've got, I think, 11 or 15 cases, all of which apparently came from the same event.
Yeah.
So you can look at something like that and say, okay, so it's not. Yes, it will spread.
Yeah.
You can hear people in South Africa today saying it seems to be spreading quite quickly, but yet nobody really is going to hospital. So when you take all of that information, surely, and you make a judgment based upon what you know rather than what you don't know.
Well, but that's why I think the response has been quite limited. I mean, it's just requiring masks in some places and the travel restrictions.
Yeah, but the travel restrictions are, I think, the biggest problem.
Yeah, well, I think they're
by far.
And also the requirement to isolate if you come into contact with an identified case, which is obviously a rather difficult thing. But I mean, yeah, no, I agree. I think the travel restrictions were a panic measure, and they were too late the moment they were announced.
Yeah, exactly right. John Rental is here. We're going to take a short break. We've got lots of other things to talk about, including other Christmas related items, perhaps. But also, we've got to talk about where we go over the course of the next few days as well. Keir Starmer was trying to stick it to Boris Johnson yesterday at PMQs.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. If you were listening yesterday, you would have heard us playing out Prime Minister's questions. Boris Johnson got quite a skewering, actually, from Sir Keir Starmer on the whole business of the Christmas party. And you said it's a different and a separate issue. So
What
do you think is going to happen with the Christmas party story? Because the Mirror, obviously, are running sort of day two on it.
Yeah.
They seem to have quite a lot of info on it. I'm amazed it's taken this long for it to come out.
Well, that's the extraordinary thing. It's taken a whole year for it to surface, and of course that softens the story to an extent, because it's so much harder to try and establish the facts that long after the event.
Mm.
But I think this is the reason Keir Starmer used it, is because the thing about one rule for them and a different rule for everybody else is absolute poison for this government,
and it's a recurring theme, isn't it?
They keep on running into it in different forms.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's why Matt Hancock had to resign, and it's the sort of thing that drives people.
That's why he had to U-turn on that. So remember, he didn't want to self-isolate on that Sunday morning.
Exactly,
the fastest U-turn in the history of U-turns.
That's right, but it's the sort of thing that goes down really badly in focus groups.
Mm.
Because in November
of last year, I remember it very well. November, everything was shut. The pubs were closed. You weren't supposed to be mixing with anybody. It was, you know, shut down November to save Christmas.
Yeah.
Look how that turned out.
Absolutely.
And then we didn't save Christmas anyway.
Yeah.
You know.
And so, you know, the Prime Minister tried to respond by stirring the feud between Keir Starmer and Angela Rayner, his deputy.
Yeah. What do you make of that? Is it a feud?
Oh, definitely.
Is it?
I mean, I think
full blown.
The body language at Prime Minister's questions was telling. They were both.
I mean,
they were sitting next to each other, but they might as well have been in different rooms.
What's wrong with the Labour Party? Why do they always have these feuds that always go on in the middle of them?
It's just politics.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't it? The Tories may have them, but they never seem to have them to the same degree, do they? I mean, Blair and Brown in the end hated each other, right?
Yeah.
As do apparently clearly Angela Rayner and Sir Keir Starmer and Jeremy Corbyn and pretty much everybody else. This is just a sort of toxic atmosphere.
Well, there's a certain amount of tension between Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak. I mean, Rishi Sunak clearly
wants
the Prime
Minister's
job.
Yeah, but you don't see it publicly.
There isn't the personal animus.
No. You don't get something like happened on bizarrely that odd day when there was a reshuffle in the Labour Party, when she clearly hadn't been told there was going to be a reshuffle.
Yeah, well, Keir Starmer says he did tell her, but he then started doing the reshuffle while she was speaking in order to prevent her from sticking her oar in.
Right.
I mean, that was an indicator.
That was quite a weird thing to do, I thought.
It was.
I don't think anybody really noticed or cared outside of the Westminster bubble.
No, but I mean, the point is that Angela Rayner had had obstructed his previous reshuffle in May. He didn't want her to do that again. So he deliberately started making his calls to shadow ministers while his deputy was speaking.
Yeah, very strange business indeed. And what about Rees-Mogg, for the first time yesterday, wearing a mask in PMQs?
Indeed.
I'm told by Peter Cardwell, I can't suffice this to be true, but apparently wearing Eton colours on the mask, which I suppose is his version of putting two fingers up to whoever asked him to
I wouldn't recognise Eton colours as
myself. Me neither. So,
and as I didn't actually notice that Rees-Mogg was wearing a mask. Mm.
It was only because we were watching the front bench specifically to see whether more people were wearing masks.
But that is a breakthrough, because Rees-Mogg is one of the real holdouts against
and presumably maybe he was persuaded because he's got some other things going on currently, which is include the investigation of his rather bizarre £6 million loan.
Well, yes, the last bit of I
wish I had a company that could loan me £6 million.
That does seem it does seem a rather unconventional transaction.
Yeah,
that does. This is where the rich are different from you and
yes
me. Mike, because they have these kind of arrangements that look very odd to
yeah, I mean, most of
people.
Us go to work, get paid for that, and then go home.
Yeah.
You know, you don't go, that's okay.
I'll just take a £6 million loan from my company.
I tell you what, because I don't want to pay myself any real money, so I'll just take it as a loan, and then that way I won't pay any tax on it, right?
Presumably. I have no idea what the arrangements are, but I mean, this is part of the dry tinder that is still available to be set fire to,
yes,
by the Labour Party over MPs' second jobs,
yeah,
and all the sort of standards business, which is, I think is going to run and run. Mm. I mean, I think it does the government some damage. And again, partly because it feeds into this idea that there's one rule for them and a different rule
and
for
I think
else.
That will have a sort of corrosive effect over time. I mean, yeah, already, I mean, people are already saying to me, well, if they do decide to lock down Christmas, you know, I'm not doing that again, kind,
yeah,
of thing. You know, so if you do have a plan in place,
yeah,
to see your mother or your auntie or whatever, yes, you're just going to go ahead and do it anyway.
These are all the sorts of things that start to wear a government down.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Boris Johnson very successfully pulled off the trick of pretending his was a new government.
Mm.
That started in not just July 2019, but actually a new government that started after the election in December 2019. 2 years ago.
And it actually started rather well, if you remember. I mean, by the end of January, he'd done what he said he was going to do, even though on the very like sort of last hour of midnight,
yeah,
people were still in the Remain camp saying, no, it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
and then it happened.
And you know, 2 years isn't very long in the lifetime of a government, but it's long enough for some of these things to start to chip away at the government's credibility. And you know, the thing about you know, your reputation, you know, on those kinds of issues, you know, standards and being out of touch, is it's very difficult to get it back. You know, there's just a sort of natural force that's going to drag Boris Johnson down.
Yeah. But at the moment, we're in this kind of limbo, as I said, where I'm told the next sort of proper announcement we expect is on the 18th. I think there's going to be some kind of travel announcement made on the 9th.
Yeah.
But the 18th is the third week after the Saturday's sort of announcements about the travel and everything else.
Right.
And I mean, I was saying something this morning. It could well be that on the 18th of December, they say, actually, we've had a look at this variant. It's not that dangerous, so everything's fine. By which time, all the Christmas parties have been cancelled. People have decided not to go on holiday. And they'll all be going, well, why couldn't you have told us that earlier?
Well, yes, which is completely unfair, because the reason they didn't get told earlier is because we didn't know, and we don't know now.
Right.
We don't know.
But they might not know then.
That is a scenario which I think, you know, which is perfectly likely. But it's equally possible that this variant turns out to be really nasty. I mean, we haven't actually seen any evidence.
Well, none of
yet.
Them have been really nasty, though, have they? I mean, basically, we've had COVID in various different forms, and all of which have pretty much acted the same way.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
This nonsense about, you know, all. Or maybe it might be possible that the this one gets around the vaccine.
Yeah.
Well, there's no evidence of that.
But I don't want to make the mistake again of predicting what I hope will happen.
No, exactly. But equally, like I said, they should be better at doing this, because
they can't be.
The top line on the news this morning when I woke up was that they've bought another 120 million jabs so they can continue boosting people for the years.
Yeah, but that's sensible. I mean, that's what we want them to do.
Well, is it though? People want them to sort out the country. They want to sort out the migrant problem. They want to sort out the NHS. They want people to be able to not be dying of cancer because they haven't been seen by anybody.
Yeah.
They don't want to just hear this constant, you know, refrain of, don't worry, get your booster. That's all you need to do, because then everything will be fine, because we've heard all that before.
Yeah, but I mean, either that's what Chris Whitty says. Is that, you know, we've got to live with this.
He says that
means we will have to have repeat vaccines, you know, for the foreseeable,
maybe
forever.
Yeah, but not if they keep making reasons out for there to be possibilities that they don't work. Because on the one hand, they're telling you to get them.
Yeah.
I mean, like, one of the most ridiculous statements I think I ever heard was the one from Boris on the Saturday, to say it might be that the first two vaccines aren't enough or don't work, so you better get a third one.
Yeah.
And you go, well, if the first two don't work...
That's not quite what he said.
Well, it kind of was.
Yeah.
Kind of was. I mean, I just think they need to be sharper and better. We've been doing this for a long time now.
What you're saying is you just wish the virus would go away and leave us alone.
No, I don't wish that. I wish that we would stop looking at the virus as though it's going to kill everybody, because it isn't.
Yeah.
It's
going
to kill some people, and it will continue to kill some people, but most of the people that it kills are people that were being killed by it last year. It's not killing different people. It's killing people, generally speaking, who are older, who are overweight, and who have got comorbidities and are vulnerable.
I don't disagree with any of that, but I do think you have to be on guard for unexpected,
I'm constantly
unexpected
on guard.
Bad,
yeah, I'm constantly
bad
on
developments.
Guard. Yes, and you can be.
Because I think that's all that the Prime Minister is saying, and I think you're right. I think in 2 weeks' time, it will just turn out to not have
no,
been
but no,
something
but I think
too,
the point,
too serious.
What I
and
suppose,
people will then be very cheerful. I think people will be delighted that most of their
well, not if they've already
Christmas
taken,
parties have been cancelled.
Well, not if they've already taken the view that they had to cancel things, because that, unfortunately, he's created uncertainty.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing.
Well, no, he hasn't created uncertainty. The virus has created the uncertainty.
Well, no, he has, because he's taken notice of something that happened in South Africa, which at the moment doesn't appear to be very serious.
Well, you, but he's acting on advice of Chris Whitty and
well,
Patrick Vallance, who are the real government.
That was
in this
his
country.
First mistake,
and that's what they say, and that's what the public expects him to do.
Well, I think the public expects him to do better, but that's another story. We're out of time, unfortunately. John Rentoul, thank you very much indeed.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Right now, though, we're going to talk to our man up in the founder and CEO of Switchcraft, Andrew Long, because Storm Arwen, which hit last weekend in some parts of Britain much worse than in others, caused an awful lot of damage in parts of Scotland, parts of the north of England, of course, as well. And the problem is, for an awful lot of people, last night was their sixth night without any power whatsoever. And that, unfortunately, for anyone who suffered from having no power and no hot water in this kind of weather, because it's very cold out there at the moment, you know that it's an absolute nightmare. So the question I've got, and I'm sure it's a very big task that the electric companies have got to sort out, and the power companies, but why is it taking them so long? Andrew, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
It's a terrible thing to have to be without electricity, without power, without any way of making any food, without any way of washing or anything like that. I can't imagine what these poor people are going through, but why is it taking so long for it to be fixed?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely brutal. And it's at the point where it's not just an inconvenience. It could be really a matter of life and death, or almost, you know, that kind of severity in some cases. And I don't know why it's taking so long. It shouldn't take that long. These are the sorts of things that, you know, the government and the regulator is meant to be taking care of in the background, and that, you know, it's that, you know, there should be plans in place to deal with this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, warm expressions of sympathy are not really good enough.
No. And I mean, I keep hearing stories of, you know, communities pulling together and helping each other and making sure that people aren't suffering too much from, you know, hypothermia and trying to move people into houses if they can. But I was hearing stories yesterday of some families being offered homes kind of 3 hours away, which obviously they can't do. Some people who can't leave because they've got children who have to go to school. There's elderly relatives to worry about. You know, it seems to me that there's not, like a lot of things in this country, there's not a kind of emergency framework to go to when something like this happens.
Yeah, absolutely. You can build resilience into the system, but it costs money to do that, and it takes foresight to do that, and it seems like it hasn't happened. And this, of course, this comes on the back of the situation in the retail energy market this winter, where the whole design and structure of the market has really fallen apart. Half of the energy suppliers in the country have gone bust, roughly, in the last few weeks,
right.
and the competitive market there is not working. So the energy sector is really in bad shape, and we need a new regulatory framework.
Yes, I mean, it's kind of ironic if you're paying top dollar for your electricity and your power, and there isn't any.
Exactly. I mean, not only have your bills gone up hugely in the last few weeks, but actually the prices are being held down and will eventually be added on to all of our tax bills.
Yeah.
So there's more to come in terms of the pain, which we're not seeing yet and which we'll see in the next couple of years in general taxation.
Yeah. And what is the kind of protocol when something like this happens? Is it left to the power companies individually to work on the repairs? Is it left to local councils to sort out people's accommodation problems? I mean, is there a kind of, I suppose my question is, overarching emergency services network?
Yeah, I mean, the system is broken up. So although there are some companies like the legacy energy giants like British Gas who take part in different parts of the value chain. So they have power stations and then they also retail energy. For the most part, there's a kind of web of companies all doing different bits and pieces, some doing generation, some doing infrastructure like transmission, and some doing retail and dealing with customers. Mm. So although most people will, it's a deeply unsatisfactory situation, because most people will understandably, you know, the power goes off, they call their energy supplier. They're actually just a retailer who's buying power on the wholesale markets. They don't run the infrastructure themselves. And so they can't really do much apart from say, well, you know, I hope that there'll be someone around to fix it.
Yes.
It's not particularly reassuring.
No, of course. And one of the other difficulties for a lot of people, of course, is that nobody, or many people now, no longer have what would be regarded as the old landline phone number. So that they because they've got no electricity, they've got no phone either, because the old landline phone number could be plugged into the phone network, which meant it still worked. But so they can't talk to anybody. There's no Wi-Fi. There's probably no mobile signal either. Or if there is, they can't charge their phone, because we've become so reliant upon the internet. I'm told a lot of messages have been going out on emails to people, but of course they can't see them.
Yeah, sure. And actually, if there's no one at the end of the line to pick up the phone and reassure people and give people accurate information on when their supply is going to be restored, then you know there's not that much point in communicating either.
Yes.
I mean, really, what people need is you know, engineers on the ground plugging in the power lines and getting it sorted. Mm.
I mean, is it, in your view, a problem with the way the power is supplied? I mean, obviously we know in many rural areas the power is on overhead wires, which presumably can be blown over, or trees can fall on them, that kind of thing. And we saw that happening with the rail network, didn't we, during COP26, where the trains were all stopped from going to Glasgow because a tree fell on one of the overhead power lines. So, I mean, is there a problem with the way that our power is kind of distributed, if you like?
Sure, yeah. I mean, obviously, if you've got underground cables, they are more resilient to a tree falling over than an overhead power line. Yeah. And that's something which you can either invest in or not. Mm. But that obviously takes years to manage, and it needs to be planned ahead. And it hasn't really happened.
No. But again, that's something that we say quite a lot in this country, isn't it? This is something that should have been planned ahead a while ago, but nobody ever really did anything about it.
Yeah, sure, and it's obviously easy to say with hindsight. You know, now we've had a big storm, but equally, I don't think it was particularly difficult to predict that at some point there would be a severe storm. I mean, climate change is heavily on the agenda, and although one storm doesn't indicate climate change by itself, you know, equally it doesn't take a genius to predict that there's going to be a storm coming at some point.
Yes, and it might be good, as I always say, to kind of learn something from what happened this time to make it more resilient for the next time. And I appreciate that might take a lot of money, might take a lot of time, but there's been an awful lot of money taken out of the energy business by shareholders and by individual sort of investors. You know, maybe it's time to look at doing it a different way.
Sure. I mean, I strongly agree with you that it's time to look at doing things a different way. But I don't think that nationalizing it, a few people have been called for the whole system to be nationalized. Yeah. And I don't think that delivers a good outcome. Neither do I think the price cap is good news in the long term. All of these things are sticking plasters that will you know, give an artificial boost in the short term. They might lower bills in the short term.
Yeah.
But what we need is a properly functioning competitive market with challengers nipping at the heels of the big boys, keeping them honest. And then whether you're with a big supplier or a small supplier doesn't really matter in that environment. But you know, the competition is the mechanism to keep people honest, keep people hungry, and keep them delivering great outcomes for customers, because they know that if they don't, they're going to lose those customers. So that for me is the way to solve the retail market. Of course, that infrastructure and transmission, distribution or whatever does, of course, need to be a bit more centralized.
I was going to say, because it will be a bit like Network Rail, presumably, where the actual sort of infrastructure is managed by a big company, one of the big power companies, or maybe by the big four or something. And so moving that around and changing the way that delivers the actual power is quite a big problem.
Yeah, sure. And I think the key to a longer term sustainable solution is the right input from the private sector, but really crucially, the right incentive structure around that. So if you say, you know, here's your, you know, bid for this contract, you can run the power network in this part of the country, and then you can all relax and go home and pay the senior management and your shareholders you know, large amounts of money. That is obviously nonsense. There needs to be, insofar as possible, there needs to be performance-related pay for these companies on the level of the kind of contracts that they're awarded. So they need to be incentivized to do a great job, and they need to be punished financially when something like this happens.
Mm.
And if the right incentives are in place, the private sector can take up that challenge and deliver. But if you've just got a contract which pays them, no matter what, then obviously they're not going to invest.
No, quite. And what is the compensation situation? I'm told that some people have been offered compensation already. Does it depend on which company you happen to be with, or is there a statutory limit to what you can be offered?
Yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know the law. I've seen what you've seen, I guess, in the press, which is that the standard number is £70 for the first 24 hours or 48 hours if the weather's bad, not that your power is likely to be affected if it isn't, and then another £70 per 12 hours of disruption. I mean, and then a maximum of £700. I mean, fine. Look, I'd rather have £700 than not, clearly. But it doesn't come close to, not only does it not compensate for the lack of hassle, I wouldn't be at all surprised if many families were down far more than that in terms of emergency hotel accommodation, travel costs, disruption to their working life and so on. So it doesn't quite touch the sides.
No, exactly right. Well, good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Andrew Long, founder and CEO there of Switchcraft, talking about a terrible situation up in the north of England. If you're living up there or if you're in Scotland where it's also bad, I'm told, in the Peak District where it's also bad, do let us know what's going on. We'll try and see what we can do to rouse somebody from their torpor to try and get something sorted out. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Jason Dudley's not very happy. He's texted and he says, I suppose the power cut story is Boris's fault as well. Poor show today so far, Mike. Hope it improves. Hope it improves. I mean, it's very hard to improve this show. But I'll tell you what, I have not blamed Boris Johnson for the power cut, right? I have not blamed Boris Johnson for the storm. But what I have blamed him for is his inability to be able to get on with things properly, his inability to understand why people are annoyed with what he's done when it comes to the way he's changed the rules on COVID right now because of this variant, which doesn't at this moment in time appears to be very dangerous. And also for having to give the impression by having a party when nobody else was allowed to, that he doesn't care about the rules. Simple. Those are the facts, Jace. I'm sorry if you don't like them, but those are the facts. And I'm not one of those. You should know better than to accuse me of blaming Boris Johnson for everything. I don't do that. I say well done to him when he does something well. But, you know, I'm searching around for something at the moment. Maybe you can help me, Jace. This is Talk Radio.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The problem that we have and the problem that we continue to have, right, is that there is still a fair amount of uncertainty about what is going on. There's now word from the World Health Organization that they're still fairly certain that this new Omicron variant is not actually all that dangerous. That seems to still be the word that's coming from the World Health Organization and from South Africa. There was I heard a medic this morning talking about how it seems to be spreading quite quickly, but as of yet, it's still not causing an awful lot of harm. But of course, front page of the Daily Mail today, more confusion. Because Sajid Javid has said if you're going to go to a Christmas party, you must take a test before you go to make sure you're okay. But meanwhile, Theresa Coffey has said, please, no kissing under the mistletoe. I'm not quite sure which Christmas party she's been going to, but I haven't seen the mistletoe for many a year, and it's not just me. Don't be Christmas killjoys, says the headline. Well, the trouble is, people are already cancelling Christmas parties. They're already not having them. Let's talk to Dave Chawner, who's a comedian, because he's a guy that knows a thing or two about some of the events businesses that are going on at this time of the year. But also, he's probably been to one or two Christmas parties in his time. Dave, a very good morning to you.
That's the nicest introduction you've ever given me, Mike.
I know. I don't know what came over me.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say something along the lines of Dave Chawner has never been invited to a Christmas party, let's get freaked on.
Well, I was going to leave you to feed that one through, you see, because I thought if you haven't ever been, you can say that. But I'm sure that you've probably entertained one or two Christmas parties, haven't you?
It very much is getting into Christmas party season. I always find, actually, like, the end of November, middle of December, the biggest party, like, time. And actually, people are getting nervous. It's really interesting. I did a gig only last night. Half the audience were wearing masks. The other half trying to get those people to take the masks off.
Right.
I feel like we are divided.
I think that's definitely what's happened. I mean, ever since that press conference last Saturday by the Prime Minister in Downing Street, the whole country, if it wasn't divided enough already, has now literally been split down the middle, you know, because if you go on the underground now, you'll see that it's not much different from what it was before. There's a bit more enforcement going on, but it depends on what time of the day you travel. Some people are still not wearing masks and not bothering about it. Other people are wearing them. You know, it's a very confusing picture. And as I say, a lot of Christmas parties now being cancelled because people don't know what to do.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like we're back to square one, because I know, like, Boris always says that he, you know, wants to channel Churchill, but he's more like the insurance dog than the ex-prime minister at the moment. I mean, he's not in a rush to give any guidance, because let's face it, he's not going to stick to it himself, even if he does come up with it. But I think we're about 2 weeks away from guidance being given on whether Santa has to wear a face mask, whether the elves have to use hand gel, and whether Rudolph has to self-isolate because of that red nose. And at the end of the day, you would think that Boris could empathise with the plight of Santa, because he too is a fat jolly guy who a lot of grown-ups don't believe in.
Yes, well, that's not bad. However, what I would say to you is this: I don't think he's so much like Churchill the dog, which is now rather a well-worn epithet. I think he's more like the Churchill Hotel, which used to be round the back of Oxford Street, full of very, very wealthy people from the Middle East, and somewhere that you didn't really want to go very often for fear of what went on inside it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's quite a nice idea. And also, I want to point out, while we're talking about wealthy donors, I think that Boris is well overdue a big fat season pass to Peppa Pig World this year.
Well, listen, he's obviously got plenty of people that he could take to that place if he wished to. But I don't want to turn this into an attack on Boris Johnson, but I do want to ask the question, where does Theresa Coffey go for her Christmas parties? Because she's apparently under the impression that you can still kiss people under the mistletoe, which I'm pretty sure was pretty much outlawed as an activity even before we all went woke.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very me too. And I think if anyone has mistletoe, it's going to be banned as a biohazard. I mean, I think, to be honest, this year...
I mean, unless you're eating it as a sort of plant-based substitute for something.
Yeah, exactly. I think after the year that we've all had, I think we just need a reason to celebrate. I mean, all I want for Christmas this year is my electricity and gas bills to get cheaper. That well, I'd be
I'm sorry that I'm saying that. You can't have that one.
Well, to be honest, Mike, if I get a lump of coal in my stocking, I would be well happy, because do you know how much coal costs now? I think that is going to be black gold.
Well, you'll have to get it shipped in from China, by the sounds of it, because I don't think we're allowed to dig any of it out of the ground anymore. But, I mean, it is mad, isn't it, that we're left with this kind of hollowness. I just feel hollow at the moment, because I'm trying to get away to America, boring everybody senseless with this story about how I'm trying to take my kids to see my mother and my sister and my daughter's going to come and all of that. And it's all kind of, I don't know what to do now, because if I cancel it on the basis that it's probably not going to go ahead, and then come the 18th, everything goes, oh yeah, everything's fine, you can just do what you want. You know, that's all right, but I don't know if that's going to be the case.
This government has done the national equivalent of put up a massive sign saying wet paint don't touch, because you know whenever you see that sign you always want to touch it, and that's essentially what they've done. They've gone around and said don't panic, and I think a lot of people are kind of thinking, well, if there's no need to panic, don't tell us not to panic. And I think this year has been more disappointing than one of my Edinburgh shows, and it's gonna whimper out.
Not that bad.
We've got another, what, 30 days to go? I can only see this getting worse, unfortunately.
Because it feels, that's what it feels like. I mean, even though everything, that it's like looking into a telescope, you know, except it's around the wrong way. You know, everything that you're seeing is there. You're pretty sure that it's there, but somehow it just doesn't look right. And the same thing for me, where I'm looking out into the streets, I'm seeing nothing to alarm me. I'm not seeing any sort of, you know, increase in numbers of people going to hospital, people getting sick, people getting ill, people dying. No, but instead, there's this kind of sense of foreboding that something else is going to happen.
there's a sense of hysteria. I think that's actually a very good point, because you know what? Like, I was talking to someone the other day and they were saying, you know, they were absolutely petrified. And I was like, what are you petrified about? Like, genuinely. And they were like, well, it just doesn't feel good. And there's is a sense in the air rather than anything that you can point at. Mm. And for the economy, for jobs, for hospitality, for people's well-being, it ain't a good mixture.
No, it really isn't. So as far as Christmas parties are concerned, have you got any planned or have you had any cancelled? What's going on?
I mean, lots of people have tried to cancel me coming to their Christmas party. To be honest, Mike, I actually want an excuse to not go to a couple of Christmas parties.
Yes.
You know, that's the big one. But I found it really funny the other day when there was a reporter who I know at the press briefings talking about whether people can go and see school nativities. And I know for a fact that he doesn't have kids. So that was a big question mark.
That is, yeah, that's a bit worrying, isn't it? Yeah. But I mean, yeah, apparently if you're a parent now of a young child, you will get a video made of the nativity play and then get it sent to you so you can watch it in the comfort of your own home as if it was all done on Zoom. So you don't have to actually go anywhere to see it.
Now, you see, that's ironic, because I remember only 4 or 5 years ago people being banned from taking cameras to nativity plays because they were about who would see the kids.
They were worried but you might post them in some dodgy website. And I kept saying to them, no, these are pictures of my own children, pictures of other people's children. You know, I'm a parent. I'm not likely to do that, actually.
I feel like we've gone full circle in so many things right now, and I think everyone's just taking things day by day. Mm. Which sounds fun if you're on an 1830s holiday, but if you've got kids, if you've got family, if you've got plans, you can't live like that. And actually what I would love to see is strong guidance, a roadmap to be like, this is what we're going to do this year. Because you know what, after the ghost of last year, I don't think anyone has confidence.
Well, I'm going to be doing an edition of the Political Punch-Up this afternoon, which you've been on before. And the question is, should we just cancel it now? Not because I want it to be cancelled, but just because I'd rather know. I don't want to go all the way up to the 18th and then be told, nah, we can't have it again. Or we're going to cancel it again.
Couldn't agree more. I think that was so much worse for people of actually, you know, dangling that carrot and then whipping it away at the last minute. And I do kind of think to a certain degree that, you know, I actually think, I don't know about you, I actually made the most of last Christmas. I had a lovely time, even though I was on my own. I had a corker. It was great. And I could do that again. But I think it's it's being sowed the seeds of something that's never going to come to fruition. I think that's what makes people annoyed.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Well, Dave, I hope it goes well for you. Thanks very much indeed for taking the time to talk to us. Dave Chaun, a comedian there, with his take on the Christmas conundrum, which is what we're all facing now. Nobody knows what to do, right? Now, you might not bother about that. You might say, well, actually, I don't really care about Christmas. I'm not really that involved with it. I don't really have that many people in my family. We don't really need to have a big Christmas dinner. It's not just about that. It's about the kind of anxiety levels that people have to worry about when they don't know what is actually happening, when they don't know what is going on. And some people who are, shall we say, on the more of the side of lockdowns will say, why are you getting so worked up? It's not too big of a deal to ask you not to have Christmas with your family. Well, it is for a lot of people, actually. And it is a big deal to stop people from travelling. It is a big deal to stop people from being reunited with their friends and loved ones when they haven't seen them for such a long time. And it is time, I'm afraid. And I don't make any apology for this by saying that Boris Johnson could fix it. If indeed it turns out, as we keep seeing and we keep hearing, that this particular variant is not particularly troublesome, then surely we need to make that statement. We need to make it sooner rather than later, before more people lose more money, more venues get their deals cancelled, more parties get cancelled, and more travelling plans get scuppered. Because that's not going to be good for anyone. I tell you that. Now, this is Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, if only you had a crystal ball, right, you'd be able to look into it every single day and figure out what's going to happen next. The one thing you might be able to predict, however, without a crystal ball, is that you'll hear from Meghan Markle at least every 48 hours, just to be on the safe side in case she's missing anything. Let's talk to Angela Levin, royal biographer, of course, on the news that basically she's won yet again in the legal system here in the UK, and she's claiming a great victory against the evil tabloids. Angela, very good afternoon to you.
Hello.
So, I mean, would it be right to say that the legal apparatus in this country is still very much on her side?
No, I think actually what it is I'm very disappointed in the appeal court judges, because they have put the number of words that you use from a letter or could be a book is more important than actually telling untruths about what's happened, or a sort of lack of memory about it.
Yes.
I mean, it would have been a very serious accusation, and I would have thought that the memory of talking to a royal aide over several months would have actually stayed in a mind as sharp and bright as Meghan's. Now, I looked it up, and as you just mentioned at the beginning, a small part of a letter is okay to use.
Right.
The Mail on Sunday used 585 words out of 1,250, and that's too much. So Meghan, if they'd have said you'd 300 words, she'd have lost the case.
I see.
But as that, and it's gone down to the number of words. Indeed, it is a precedent, because I know when I've tried to use things in books and features that you can only, it's never been actually itemized how many words you are allowed to use out of the whole.
Right.
So in fact, she will have made her mark in the legal world by actually setting up a precedent.
Yes.
But actually, I think that the moral side of it is more important than actually counting words.
Yes. So effectively, it's a sort of legal distinction, isn't it, between the amount of somebody's copyrighted material you can use, a bit like the way we have in this business the ability to play a snapshot of a recording of something, but you can't play the whole thing, otherwise you have to pay a bucket load of money to somebody. But this is the thing that of course she will not be explaining, because if you read what she said since this statement's been handed down, she says this: while this win is precedent setting, what matters most is that we are now collectively brave enough to reshape a tabloid industry that conditions people to be cruel and profits from the lies and pain that they create. Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing.
You don't read too many of those words either.
Well, there's nothing in what the Mail on Sunday printed that was a lie. There was no pain that they created, given that she had written the letter to her father. So she's very good at jumping on the old bandwagon and going, this is me sort of fighting single-handedly, like the Joan of Arc, against the dreaded, ghastly, evil press.
Yes, well, Joan of Arc is one of the many types of people she likes to be. I mean, she wants to reshape the tabloid industry. She doesn't think small. The fact that it's a few words will make a huge difference doesn't interest her. And she's got this sort of I'm a martyr type approach on that today.
Meghan Martyr.
I find it absolutely extraordinary. This is a victory not just for me, but for anyone who's ever felt scared to stand up for what is right.
Yes.
I mean, please. I hope that perhaps they might consider going to the Supreme Court. I don't know, it's going to cost millions more. But if you think that they've spent millions on this and it comes down to the number of words, it's just so disappointing, isn't it?
I think that's the problem, isn't it? Because if it is a matter of legality, they're not going to win on that front, because the law is the law. And as far as the High Court is concerned, then the Appeal Court, and then even the Supreme Court, they'll just look at it in exactly the same way and say, well, this is not an issue of whether you breached anybody's privacy. It's an issue of you overusing the number of words.
Yes, that's why it's so tragic, actually, I think. We don't know what this country's coming to, really. I think there has to be an element of actually understanding what the aim was, and not just a number of words.
Yeah. And do you think this will have a sort of chilling effect, though, on some of the tabloids and what they write about them?
Well, I mean, I would think, why doesn't everybody stop writing or talking about her at all, along with Harry? Yeah. And then, we're all safe. But that's not how it's going to be, is it?
No.
And actually, she's got a huge press department, which, as you said earlier, presses out information about her. Each time it's more astonishing than the next. I have to hand it to them for that. People do take it up. And I think she managed also to get a snipey thing at the Queen, at the royal family, where she says they were constantly berating Harry and they're sort of implying that she'd saved him.
Right.
Harry was a much loved member of the royal family, actually, and it was only once he got married that things began to be different, because he broke rules which he knew were very important of being part of the royal family, like earning money from consumer goods while you're using your royal title. I mean, we have to say that a lot of their success, financial success, is due to the fact that he is a prince.
Yes.
But that's not taken into consideration. If they hate the royal family so much, why don't they just leave them alone and get on with what they want to do? But they're tearing at it. And Meghan likes to win 100%. She's not, it seems to me, that's just my opinion, if I'm still allowed to have one in this country, that she
you can certainly have one in the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, that's absolutely sure.
That she doesn't want to compromise. She didn't want to compromise when she joined the royal family, and I don't think she wants to compromise now.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And they do have this unerring ability for just kind of zeroing in on things, don't they? And then they start to kind of, you know, whittle their way around inside it. I mean, we saw just yesterday Spotify saying, you know, we're a bit concerned we haven't seen any content from you despite this deal that we've done to give you lots of money to do a podcast for us. And, you know, they seem to kind of target one thing after another, and then they move on, and then they kind of the next thing.
But she wants to rule the world. She wants to rule the world. I mean, that's the reason. But actually, that's very interesting, because somebody told me, and I can't say who it was, that they paid them a third of the 80 million upfront. Mm. So that's quite a few million. And for that, they got the really the most boring half hour of travel by very rich people.
Yes.
Very difficult for them to, you know, have a plane or go anywhere at the beginning of the lockdown. The Spotify, I'm told as well, are also very cross that Meghan is doing lots of interviews with other people as Harry is speaking out on all sorts of subjects, but totally ignoring them.
Right.
And having quite a problem to know what to do. I hope when they look at the contract, they can see exactly what they were told would happen and then can operate from there. But it's just quite interesting. And I will put my neck out again and say this is a symptom, I think, of lack of loyalty. They haven't been loyal to the royal family. Meghan hasn't been loyal to her own family, however ghastly they are. She's not sort of tried to be loyal, and she's not loyal to Spotify either. You can't compare the two, but it's an indication that it's she's got a very, very firm path ahead of her, and nothing's going to stop her. So she's, you know, we all need to keep quite clear.
Well, I think we were talking the other day about how her move into the sort of Ellen DeGeneres world from Oprah Winfrey was very much a kind of a tactical retreat, if you like, because it meant that she was no longer being out there as a kind of political figure. She was going to try and be sort of cutesy and folksy and, you know, do a little prank here and there and walk around on the street and talk to an awful lot of people. You know what I mean? It's so kind of contrived.
A drink from a baby's bottle.
Yes.
Well, that was quite sick-making, really.
It was.
But now she enjoyed it so much that she wants to have a show of her own now.
Oh, yeah.
Where she interviews people. So they don't sort of seem to be able to do one thing, study it, do it really well. I mean, it's all flitting from one, like a butterfly, from one subject to another subject, but it's always going to conquer. It's always going to win. It must be quite a headache, actually, to have that as your aim non-stop.
It must be quite distracting, really, because we're told that they're not coming back. Certainly, Harry's not coming back either for Christmas, it would appear. So Christmas will come and go. Another annus horribilis, you might say, for the Queen, who's still not particularly back to full form. A friend of mine got an MBE the other day, and he got it from Princess Anne in Windsor. And he was saying, what an incredible place to visit. What an amazing place to be in. You know, the paintings, the history, the way that the royal family deals with the numbers of people that they have to see and the way that they talk to them all and how the Queen has been doing that for so long. But, you know, they're literally down to, and Charles was away in Barbados, I think, they're down to Princess Anne and William and Kate were doing something else. There's literally, you know, they've got a shortage of royals, basically. We do shortages a day every day. They've got a shortage of royal family people.
Yes, there's only certain people who can actually give out these gongs, actually. There's not very many of them. I think that Princess Anne deserves that because she's very hardworking indeed. She just doesn't draw the press to all her engagements, but she really cares about the country and does a lot of very good work. And she's very close to her mother as well. So I think that, you know, that's not necessarily one of the most important issues, really. But what is that they never, there's no gratitude there. There's no gratefulness. I just find it deeply depressing.
Yes, well, there's a lot to be depressed about at the moment, so I guess this just kind of feeds into the fervour of it all, doesn't it? And what news do you think is coming out of the Prince Andrew office, given that the Ghislaine Maxwell case has now started?
Yes, well, it's shocking to hear, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it makes you feel quite sick when these three women go in and say that, you know, they were innocent and how badly they were abused.
Mm.
I mean, one from late yesterday said that she was very thrilled to think that she was going to work for Maxwell.
Yeah.
But in fact, she's a total manipulator. And I think they're damaged for life, aren't they? Because if you are abused like that when you're young and naive, and often they were people who came from bad homes or single parents, that you are vulnerable anyway, and to take advantage of that is just terrible. And I think Prince Andrew is tarnished by that, whether or not he's guilty or not, we don't know. But it's a dark cloud that hangs over him for being friendly with these people, and it wasn't actually totally hidden of what they were doing on the side.
No, it seems very ill-judged indeed. Angela, thanks very much indeed. Angela Levin there, reporting into us, our favourite royal biographer, talking about Meghan and Harry winning against Associated Newspapers, against what many of us thought might happen. She seems to have been able to hold up her end of the bargain, and because of the fact that they basically used too many words from the letter, that's why she's won. Not because it was an invasion of privacy, despite the fact that she'd already given out the letter to several people, shown it to several people, and basically said, you know, I expect this to be leaked. So let's make sure that if it is leaked, it's leaked in the right way. So they haven't won on any basis that there was no right for the paper to actually print the letter. There was a right for the paper to print the letter, but they just printed too much of it, which seems to be what the problem is.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.